So if you come here early on Sunday mornings, like 8:30, the last Sunday and this Sunday, and you walk in through this door, you look to your right into the Sophia Lyon Foz room, you will see like 20 people gathered around our big table. And believe it or not, we are all there to study and read together the Bible. Who knew that 20 of you would wake up at 8 in the morning on a Sunday and come think and talk about the Bible with Stephanie and I? It is just, you prove the theory wrong that, yeah, we don't care about that. You do. You really do. And I do. And so we hear a story today that will be familiar, particularly the lead character. And Judd Wuskill is going to read it for us.
Later on that day, the disciples had gathered together, but fearful of those trying to persecute them, had locked all the doors in the house. Jesus entered, stood among them, and said, "Peace to you." Then he showed them his hands and side. The disciples, seeing the master with their own eyes, were exuberant. Jesus repeated his greeting, "Peace to you. Just as the Father sent me, I send you." Then he took a deep breath and breathed into them. "Receive the Holy Spirit," he said. But Thomas, sometimes called the twin, one of the 12, was not with them when Jesus came. The other disciples told him, "We saw the teacher." But he said, "Unless I see the nail holes in his hands, put my finger in the nail holes, and stick my hand in his side, I won't believe it." 8 days later, his disciples were again in the room. This time Thomas was with them. Jesus came through the locked doors, stood among them, and said, "Peace to you." Then he focused his attention on Thomas. "Take your finger and examine my hands. Take your hand and stick it in my side. Don't doubt, believe." Thomas said, "My master, my teacher." Jesus said, "So you believe because you've seen with your own eyes. Even better blessings are in store for those who believe without seeing."
So as I told you, Doug and Jen have two kids, Connor, who's sitting right there, and Caroline, who's now with my daughter Ella in classes. And so I dedicate this sermon to them. Dear Connor, it's going to be okay. Dear Caroline, it is hard for me to believe, but I have known you almost your entire lives. Connor, since you were, I think, 5, and Caroline, since you were a babe in arms, born not 2 weeks before my own daughter Ella was born in 2003. And now as I think of you both, what never ceases to amaze me and all of the adults in this room is how quickly you grow. Connor now, sometimes in the back of the sanctuary with coming-of-age class, and then coming up through the receiving line and shaking my hand and give me feedback on the sermon. And Caroline now in 3rd grade, running with Ella hand-in-hand out to the playground here at church where your parents, Doug and Jen, used to carry you. You don't know it quite yet, but how time flies. How quickly the years pass, which is why you might hear adults in this room say something about how youth is always wasted on the young. But Connor and Caroline, I know I can count on you to prove us wrong. Now you may be wondering, why am I embarrassing you with a personal letter like this on a Sunday morning? I hope you can forgive me. Because the reason I'm writing is that your parents, as you know now, bought this auction sermon last spring, and the topic, as you know, they've assigned me is uncertainty and doubt and trust and faith. Your dad wrote me. He said, "I have been intrigued for much of my life by the interplay between certainty on the one hand and doubt on the other. And though we are often taught that being certain is good and projects strength in the world, your dad says, I've come to learn, on the contrary, that certainty can actually be a bad virtue because it has a way of closing your mind." And then your mom added, inspiring me to write this sermon directly to you and to your sister so you can blame her. She said, "One theme I feel like I'm always trying to teach my children is to think independently and embrace their doubts, even when they're doubting me. Because it's from all of that that they will get closer to knowing who they are and what they believe." I hope you can hear, as I do, the love for you and your sister that are in these words. If there is one thing that you can be certain about, one thing you should never doubt, it is how much your parents love you. But what you may not know is that beyond the love, parenting can be a pretty humbling business, can't it, parents? Marked as much by uncertainty and doubt and questions and late night wonderings as it is by faith and hope and trust and really unspeakable joy. I say this not to scare you. You're thinking, "You mean they don't actually know what they're doing?" I say it to remind you that they, two of them, and all of us are human too. And the bond between you is actually made stronger when your uncertainties and your parents' uncertainties aren't hidden away in little tiny boxes, never to be opened in front of one another. Now, if you heard the reading the judge just read for us about the famous character in the Bible, Mr. Doubting Thomas, you might think, as many adults in this room do, that doubt is an enemy of religion, which is actually a misreading of the text. But it is still true that whole swaths and segments of people give up on religion because they think that a person like me, a minister, is going to ask them to check their brains at the door when they come in. The way you might check a hat or a coat. "Here's your ticket stub, sir. Just give me your brain for an hour. You can get it when you come back out." Now, I will talk about the role of faith and doubt in a moment, but lest you think that your doubts don't have a place in this room, we will all repeat some affirmations of our faith so you are absolutely clear. First, we are free, say with me, to question the pronouncements of the church. Or as I like to say, here there is a free pulpit. You have blessed me with that. And here there is a free pew. Which means that we can both question the things that we hear, that you can expect to hear things you will not agree with. Things that challenge your assumptions, Connor. Things that make you question your belief. Things that cause you to doubt. And this is because it is our job in this room, in part, to comfort the afflicted. You've heard me say this before. And afflict the comfortable. And many of us in this room, frankly, are quite comfortable. And nothing afflicts us, actually, quite like having the things that we thought were true challenged or changed. Nothing afflicts us like that. We hear it sometimes as people go around this room in the open sharing time, and we hear about unspeakable loss. And maybe we walked into this space thinking that the world is fair and that everything happens for a reason. And then we remember our dear Tommy, or our neighbor in Natick, and our assumptions are challenged. That's what church is about. Which leads actually to the second affirmation. Doubt can help us. Winnow. Learned a new word. The truth from untruth. Connor, doubt is big for us. So much so that you might have heard the same tired joke that asks, what do Unitarian Universalists leave burning on someone's front lawn? A question mark. That's right. Hear me sigh. But this is not because we do not have convictions, or worse, because we get to believe whatever I want or whatever you want. Instead, it's because we believe that when it comes to trying to figure out our way through the world with principle and honesty and integrity and authenticity and humility, questions like, who am I? And is this right? And what's next? And what does this mean? And who can I serve? And is this true? And am I being true to myself? Often serve us so much better than simple declarations that say, this is what I believe. Just read this. Now, Connor, on this point, you might have heard how I love word etymology. And for that reason, I love that I get to tell you that the Latin root of the word question is querere, which means to search and to seek and to look. So for us, and I hope for you too, the search and the journey and the questions, the mystery, what Kushner calls the rough edges, they form the heart and the soul of our faith. Now, last affirmation, speaking of faith, and now I'm quoting from my most favorite German theologian, Paul Tillich. I'm getting a nod from our intern who knows all about theology, who said, the first word for religion must be words spoken against religion. It's good, isn't it? And then Tillich goes on, Connor, to recount the heroes of faith through time who risked the questions and spoke truth to power. And I'm just going to name a few off the top of my head. Isaiah and Jeremiah and Micah and Elijah, who sailed into town and called the people to task for their materialism and their greed and their lack of social justice, and then were booted out. Jesus, for challenging the scribes and the rabbis, whose religious laws grew more important than what it meant to love your neighbor, your sister, and your brother. Galileo, we heard of him? For challenging the theologians who said the earth revolved around the sun. Martin Luther, in a great stewardship idea, who challenged the Catholic Church's selling of indulgences that allowed them to buy their way into heaven. That would raise a lot of money, even here. Right? Just in case. William Ellery Channing, father of American Unitarianism, for challenging the orthodoxy of the early 1800s by saying, such heresy that Jesus ought to be followed instead of worshipped. Ralph Waldo Emerson, my son's namesake, for challenging what he called the corpse-cold Unitarianism of his day by saying that don't look in the Bible for the miracles of life. Walk out your door and feel the wind on your face and the sun in your eyes and see the moonlight and the starlight and the sun. That is the miracle of God, he said. and Reinhold Niebuhr, my other favorite theologian, who railed and despaired, Connor, against the church's complacency and silence and submission in Nazi Germany. It changed him from a pacifist to someone who believed that there are times when war is needed. Martin Luther King, whose day we just celebrated on Monday, for challenging the churches of his time to have a social ethic and a political ethic to go along with their pretty New England churches and their perfect liturgies. And Bill McKibben, who you may not know is a committed Christian and teaches Sunday school in his Methodist church every single week. An environmentalist of which there is no comparison, for challenging religious people like you and me to take the Bible seriously and become stewards of the earth. A reason to read that text. And Connor, these are just the ones I can name off the top of my head. Do you see how indebted we all are to those willing to challenge the status quo and to raise questions and to speak against the dogma of the day? Connor, do you see how you too and your sister can be a prophet in our own time with your doubts, with your questions? I love what your dad wrote me about this. He said, talking about the faith of his childhood, Judaism, he said that going to Hebrew school, becoming bar mitzvahed, I was never taught to, nor did I really question anything. I was taught to be certain about my faith, you said, Doug. And it is not that I have bad feelings at all about my faith. But I realized that a religious tradition that honors doubt actually caused me to learn even more about my religion and be more open and curious and have more depth than ever before. Connor, you see how wise your dad is? He's nodding. He's so wise that I could simply stop the sermon here and we could go proudly with our dads down to coffee hour. But not yet. Because, Connor, doubt on its own is not enough. And let's be honest. Let's everyone in this room please be honest and admit that sometimes uncertainty can overwhelm our lives. We can doubt our abilities. We can doubt our next steps. We can doubt even life itself. And we ask, maybe these questions sound familiar to you. What now? What next? Am I strong enough? Am I good enough? Am I smart enough? Why me? And it's in times like these, in these rough edges of life, when our worries and our fears and our uncertainties get the best of us, that we come to the question of faith. That's when we come to the question of faith, to those moments of life in the helicopter with your son wondering, is this going to work or not? Let me tell you a story about faith that I heard from my friend and colleague, Gary Smith, who recalls his professor, Walter Cook, who grew up in upper state New York, and he worked with his grandfather in the apple orchards. Now, in those days, Walter said, in order to keep the harvest fresh, and there was no refrigeration, big apple cellars were dug into the ground. And then a ladder was put down into the cellar. And bushels of apples were carried down that ladder to be stored in the cool earth. So one day, Walter's working with his grandfather in the fields. He's about 6 years old. And his grandfather, carrying a bushel of apples, disappears down the ladder into total darkness. Totally out of sight to this young boy who is hovering on the edge of the hole at ground level. Imagine like his nose just over the edge. Just, Grandpa, where are you? And feeling lonely up there, a bit scared, a little worried, a little anxious, Walter calls out to his grandfather in the darkness, Grandpa, you still there? And out of the darkness, he hears, Walt, I'm here. Here I am. Can I come down too? Walt says. I'm all alone up here. I don't like it. And his grandfather replies, of course you can. And Walt says, but I'm scared of ladders. I don't know what to do. And his grandfather says, well, Walt, just jump. I'll catch you. I'll catch you. Now, Walt is such a little boy. He's 6 years old. How dark the hole seemed. How deep. And yet Walt knew the voice. He knew and trusted and had confidence. And here's a word, Connor, had faith that his grandfather would be there. And so Walt stood up on the edge of the hole, toes to the edge, just like that. And he peered down, and he took a deep breath, and he sucked air maybe through those holes in his teeth where his two front teeth had just fallen out because he's only 6 years old. And he said again, Grandpa, are you there? I'm here, Walt. I'll catch you. Okay, here I come. And then Walter jumped. And he was caught. Said Walter to his seminary students years later, that moment is the best definition of faith I have ever known. Or as William Sloane Coffin, a third of my favorite theologians, has said, I love the recklessness of faith. First you leap, and then you grow wings. Or as Jesus put it to Thomas, who gets a bad rap, I think, because who here doesn't sometimes need to feel and touch before we have faith? But Jesus says, blessed are those who can't see, who look in the hole of our lives, in the darkness, and believe anyway, and trust anyway, and have faith anyway. So, Connor, not to sound like a CVS card, but life is so achingly beautiful at times. And at times, Connor, it can be so achingly difficult. And for you to live through and learn from both of these seasons, you're going to need to learn how to lead with your doubts at times, with all the curiosity and skepticism and questions you can manage, and also when you need to stand there with Walter on the edge of some deep, dark hole, worried, fearful, anxious, but trusting enough that someone or something will be there to catch you. Enough even for you to say with your sister, okay, here I come. Because if there's one thing that I want you to have, and I want all of us to have, more than certainty or convictions or doubts or questions, If there's one thing I want us to have, it is wings. Your dad described it as confidence, and your mom described it in her email as trust. Because it is with those wings that we can go almost anywhere and do almost anything and become almost anyone, including even learning how to become ourselves, which is sometimes the hardest task of all. And as you fly, Connor, as we fly together, rest assured, have faith that your parents and the people in this room and me and this faith that makes us better than we are and the love of God for which you must give your own name will be there to catch you when you fall. So with all my blessings and love in this room and love for you, of which you can have no doubt, I say amen.